Well, I love that, Mr. Rick Hogan. Thank you, Mr. Roger Badish. A couple weeks ago on this program, a lovely lawyer was sitting here named Deborah DiMaggio, and she was talking about her father's book, memoir slash biography, and talking about how she had discovered it and how she knew after his death that he really wanted it published. And she found an expert to help with that. His name was Raymond Benson, and you heard him talk about what that was like. Tonight, you're going to hear him talk about his fabulous career. Hello, Raymond, and I promised you you'd be back because you did a great job with that book. And that book, it's called Sarge. One of the things I found really amazing is that before you decided you'd do it, but then you typed the entire book.
Yeah, that's right. It was not a digital file. It was a manuscript that we needed to get digitized into a file. So I retyped the whole thing. That's right.
That I think is probably a wonderful way to sort of experience the writing style.
Absolutely, and that helped me figure out what I needed to leave in and what I had to take out.
You're happy with that book, aren't you?
Oh yeah, very much. I think it's
You and I both thought and think that he was a born writer.
Absolutely, it's his book. It's not.
Oh no,
my
no
book.
Question. It's, I know. Really I know. Is. You were very self-effacing and humble about it. Do you think you're a born writer? You have some. Raymond's latest book is a novel called Blues in the Dark, a really fascinating read that wonderfully takes me back in time. And on the page opposite the title page, where it says also by the author, are some roughly 40 some books.
That's right. Well, I tell you, I never thought I'd be a writer when I was growing up. You know, I got into theater. I was into movies. I was into plays. I was into music.
You were into gaming.
Gaming. Well, yeah, that was a little later too.
Yeah.
I went to college and majored in theater. At the University of Texas at Austin at that time, you could specialize in disciplines, so you could get a degree in directing, which is what I did.
Let's go back even further. You're a child of Odessa, Texas, a sort of famous...
Yeah, Odessolation.
Yeah, Odessolation, right. And you went to, long before it was the subject of Buzz Bissinger's Friday Night Lights bestseller and TV series, you went to Permian High School in 1973, graduated in 73. What was... You think of Texas, especially in those kind of years, as a very... Like, man, if you didn't play football, you were nothing. You were out of it. Was it hard for you as a kid to be sort of artistically expressive in that area?
I wasn't. We had a really good drama department at the high school, and we had a great teacher. And, that high school had money. So even the drama department had money, and so we did good productions. We had two theaters, two stages. It was nice, and it was a pretty crowded drama department as well.
Let me ask you, what did your parents do?
My father was a geologist, and he worked that area is the oil
yeah.
country.
Yeah.
So he did that, and my mom had various jobs and stuff, but mostly she was a stay-at-home mom.
Were they nurturing of your artistic?
They were very supportive. They whatever I wanted to do, they were behind it all the way, and I'm really grateful to them for that.
Yeah, and you. One of the great things is you're a kid, though. You also are terribly influenced by film.
Yes. Well, that was all you could do. I mean, if you didn't play
sports... What was
sports,
the name of the theater in Odessa? What was the name of your local movie theater?
Well, we had about two downtown that we would go to, but then around 1968, they built a brand new 70mm screen.
Yeah.
Where I saw 2001 A Space Odyssey when it first came out, which was a big influence too. But I saw Goldfinger with my dad on the big screen when I was 9, and when you're 9, you're open to a lot of stimuli, let's put it.
Yeah, indeed. What kind of reading were you doing as a kid?
Well, that was the thing. I was a big reader. I started reading in before kindergarten.
Yeah.
And when I was in first grade, at the end of one semester, they put me in second grade. because I was a good reader.
I was
a big reader.
What sort? Anything in particular? At that early age, you just read whatever you
can get. At that time, I was reading,
on.
You know, I'm sure I was reading like Tom Swift and that kind of stuff. But when I was nine, once I saw Goldfinger, I started reading Ian Fleming.
Did you really?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
You think that's a little early to dip
into? It was
into,
a little early.
Dip into Ian Fleming.
It was a little early, and, you know, maybe I didn't get everything.
Sure,
but
sure.
I got the story, you know?
Yeah.
And then I reread them a couple of years later, and then a few years later.
When there were the more meaning out of the book.
Yeah.
What drew you to theater, do you think?
Well, I thought I wanted to be an actor. I mean, it was seeing movies and stuff. And I did act a lot in high school.
Sure.
And then when I got to college.
And into college.
But
you switched. You initially went to college for acting. And
that's
quickly
right.
Switched.
After one semester, I became a directing major, mainly because there was a professor there named Francis Hodge, who was had a textbook that was widely used around the country, and he was like the John Houseman character of The Paper Chase,
sure.
where everybody was in awe of him and scared of him, but worshipped him, you know, because he was that brilliant. And as a matter of fact, next month in November, there's going to be a reunion of my people in the drama department paying homage to Dr. Hodge. And I'm going to be helping to run that thing.
Yeah, I'll bet you are.
Yeah.
I'll bet you are. When you got out of, you were also writing plays at the time, were you not?
Well, I wrote one.
Yeah.
I was composing music. I would collaborate with playwrights who were writing musicals, and they had lyrics, and I put music to their lyrics.
Tell me about your musical background.
I took piano lessons when I was pretty young, like 7 or 8. But only a couple of years, because I didn't like it.
Nobody at 7 or 8 really likes it.
But I was really good at playing by ear, and so I just kept playing. I developed my own style, but, you know, I can still read a little music. And I just kept playing and building on what I had learned.
How good were you?
I'm pretty good.
Yeah, I'll bet you are. That's another part of Raymond Benson's creative output is his music. So you graduate from college, like a lot of kids from Texas and from Louisiana and from Montana and from Illinois, you say, I gotta go to New York.
I did. I stopped for 1 year in Houston, Texas at the Alley Theater. I was an apprentice there for 1 year, an apprentice director. And that was a good experience. And then I moved to New York.
All right, let's talk about New York. Well, we got to take, in a minute, we got to take a little commercial break. But we're going to get into New York. We are going to devote a lot of time to Blues in the Dark, too, later in this half hour. But Raymond's career has been...
It's a long and winding road.
Oh, but it's also incredibly prolific, too. And it's drawn you to different sorts of writing. And I think I want to try to get into the creative brain of Raymond Benson. And you must be quite a workaholic. You dedicate the book to your family, as any good author would. That would be your wife, Randy, and your son, Max.
That's right.
And as any writer knows, the family has to put up with a great deal from the writer.
They do.
So we'll take a commercial break and come back. And Raymond Benson has arrived in New York. And we'll see what the young Texan goes through in that big city. Hi there, my guest Raymond Benson, novelist extraordinaire, very prolific novelist. You can go to his website later on tomorrow when you're at work, kill an hour or two. It's a really wonderful website, Raymond Benson, BENSON.com, and you will see all of the books he has written. He hasn't even started writing books in our tale, as we're developing on this segment of the show. He's just arrived in New York. Were you, as a college graduate, who probably... And in college, had done a lot of things and relatively accomplished. Did New York shock you, surprise you, stimulate you, intimidate you?
No, not at all. In fact, I had spent a semester during college. I took a gap semester. I had written a musical with a guy named Frank Galliano. And this musical, we took it first to Rhode Island University that wanted to put it on, and then we did it in New York. And that was when I was 20.
Yeah.
And so I took that whole semester off and then went back to Austin to finish my college. So I had already spent some time in New York, you know.
What did you expect from New York
I wanted to do theater. I wanted to direct plays. I wanted to compose music. I wanted to, you know, be the director.
Be part of the whole New York theater scene. How did that go?
Well, for a few years, I did it. It was fun. There was no money in theater, so yeah. I became a writer.
That's fantastic. What kind of writer did you become then?
Well, you know, I didn't. It wasn't a plan. What happened was some friends of mine and I were sitting around a table, and the question came out, if you had to write a book, what would you write? And we went around, and we all gave an answer, and I said, well, I think I would write maybe this some sort of coffee table book encyclopedia about the history of James Bond. Because there wasn't a book like that.
Yeah, I know.
There had been a couple of Ian Fleming biographies that were out of print. There had been maybe a couple of books just on the films up to that point. But I wanted something that had everything, with critiques and analyses of all the books and all the movies and everything.
You were a devoted reader of those books by that point.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I was a big fan. And my friends heard that, and they went, that's a great idea. Why don't you do that? And so I thought about it and investigated how to go about doing it. And I met an editor at a publisher and pitched it, and I got a contract.
The James Bond Bedside Companion.
That's right.
Was that book.
Yep.
How did it sell?
Oh, it did very well. It kind of established me as this sort of Bond expert. It was nominated for an Edgar Allan Poe Award.
Right, which is great, which is very high honor in the mystery biz.
Yeah, but the main thing is I had gone to England to research it, and so I met members of Ian Fleming's family and his business people and his colleagues and friends, and that was significant.
No question. But let me ask you, what did you think of Fleming as a writer?
Oh, I mean, he's great.
The whole notion of James Bond has transcended, in the same way that Moby Dick transcends Herman Melville. Mm-hmm. The whole notion of James Bond and the films have kind of
they're different.
Overshadowed.
They split in two.
Yeah.
Fleming was a great word craftsman. He was a journalist, you know, and he was very descriptive. Definitely in the post-World War II milieu, very much, you know, the empirical British upper class,
a difficult
sensibility.
He was a difficult guy, too, wasn't he?
Yeah, well, he was complex and, you know, melancholy one time, and, you know, he was a ladies' man. I mean, he was, in many ways, James Bond is the wish fulfillment that he had of himself.
Exactly. His family must have thought very highly of the James Bond Bedside Companion.
They did. They liked it very much, and we stayed in touch throughout the rest of the 80s, and I did a little odd jobs for them, no pun intended.
Yeah.
And this was while John...
Great character.
Yeah. This was while John Gardner was writing the books.
Yeah.
And...
Well, when Fleming died, they decided this was such a lucrative franchise that they wanted it to continue on, correct?
That's right. They wanted to periodically hire a new writer to continue the novels.
Yeah.
So Kingsley Amis was first, and then John Gardner. And at the end of 95, he said he didn't want to do it anymore, and they just rung me up and said...
What did you think of the Amis and Gardner books? Did you like them?
Oh, well, yeah, sure. The Amis one is really, really good.
Yeah, he's a good writer.
Yeah. John Gardner's is very good. He wrote a lot. He was very prolific. He wrote more than Fleming did. And but, you know, then I got the call out of the blue, really. I wasn't
expecting
it.
Tell me about that call. The family called and said, hello, Raymond.
It was a guy named Dorothy Fleming. Yeah, no, it was Peter Jansen Smith, who was originally Ian Fleming's literary agent. And he was chairman of Ian Fleming Publications, the company that runs the literary side of James Bond. And he called me. He said, Raymond, would you want to give it a shot? You know, John Gardner's retiring, and we're thinking about who to hire next, and you want to give it a shot. And basically, I kind of had to audition. I had to write an outline for a novel, and it had to be approved by them, the Flemings, as well as the British publisher and the American publisher. And once that was approved, I had to write the first four chapters and go through the same approval
process. Sure. You were the first American. Gardner and Amis were both Brits.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I was the first American.
It was intimidating for you?
It was.
I think there's a weird... you got to be incredibly flattered, but also a little like, wait a minute, I fell in love with Ian Fleming when I was nine, and now you want me to be Ian Fleming.
Yes, exactly.
Did you have to... How much freedom was involved? Did they say, well, you've got to, like, mirror his style?
No, they didn't. They wanted him set in the, you know, that time period, the 90s. They wanted him to kind of mimic the Pierce Brosnan films, which were going on at that time.
Right.
So they said, make M a woman. That's what they wanted.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I had free rein on any of the stories and plots that I wanted to do.
That, to my mind, is such an interesting literary challenge. Was it for you?
Yeah, it was. I mean, I knew the universe. I knew it like the back of my hand.
Yeah.
And I instinctually just knew Bond stories, you know, how they were structured. There is a formula.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
You know,
sure.
And the way I would do my novels is I would look at a map of the world and figure out, okay, what hot spots is Britain interested in or concerned about?
Mm-hmm.
And then I would research that hot spot and then figure out a story to go. You know, the first book was going to be published in 97, which was the year Hong Kong was handed back to China.
Right.
So
right.
I thought, oh, well, that's a great situation for Bond, something, some kind of intrigue that would mess up the handover. And so on. You know, that's how I did it.
You had at one point in your life, a little before the Bond stuff, I think you were working for the architect I.M. Pei, right?
I.M. Pei.
I.M.
Pei. That was in New York. That was one of my day jobs.
How many day jobs did you wind up having in New York?
Two.
One?
For the first half of the 80s and then the second. The first one was it was a financial firm that was really hip and cool and young. I was a secretary first, and then they put me in charge of all the literature, all the booklets that had to get printed and written and stuff, you know, their sales pamphlets and stuff like that. But it was a company where almost everybody was under 40. And we went off on, you know, vacations together. You know, the president would pay for us to go to Bermuda for a weekend and stuff like that. It was wild.
nothing wrong with that life. What other kind of writing were you doing then?
I did the Bedside Companion.
Yeah.
And then I fell into the computer gaming industry.
I know. I told you, ladies and gentlemen, this man, Raymond Benson, has had a fascinating life. By falling into it, you fell into it when it was burgeoning.
It was the ground floor. I had an agent as a result of the Bedside Companion, and he called me one day and he said, look, there's this game company outside of New York. They have a license for James Bond to do a couple of James Bond games. And
you'd be perfect.
Yeah, you'd be perfect. That's what he said. And at the time, I was starting to get into these, what they call text adventure games like Zork, made by Infocom, where it's all text. You know, it says, you know, you are in a forest and you see a sword on the ground. What do? And you type, pick up the sword.
Pick up the sword.
And it says, you are carrying a sword. And then you go east.
Interesting.
And, you know, and it tells a story as you play the game.
Sure. How did you like that kind of running?
Oh, I loved it.
Yeah, I'll bet.
It was fun.
That
was the training for novel writing.
Yeah, no question. No question. So you begin your adventure as James Bond / Ian Fleming, and you wind up doing one, two. I'm kind of... How many books did you want?
Well, six original novels and then three movie novelizations that were based on three of the Pierce Brosnan movies, where they wrote the screenplay and I turned them into books. But it was the six originals that are the meat of my Bond novel.
See, this is it's so fascinating because we've got to get into, I don't want to talk about Blues in the Dark, but there's so much more because after you ended your Bond period, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, 7 years.
Seven years, you began writing.
My own stuff.
Yeah. This is Raymond Benson. The website is raymondbenson.com. The latest book is a novel, Blues in the Dark. We will, after the news, we'll try to talk about Blues in the Dark, but there's so much else here. Was it then, after the Bond experience, were you so much more confident and...
yes and no.
Yeah.
Because
you had to leave this one realm and go out on your...
Yeah, I had to pretty much start over.
Yeah.
You know, I had to reinvent myself
and
figure out, okay, what is my brand now? I don't want to be... You know, I didn't want to just write spy books.
Of course not.
You know, I wanted to create something that was distinctly me.
Now, where did it... There's a series of books under the Black Stiletto saga.
Yes.
Was that immediately after?
No, that came out earlier this decade. 2011 was the first one. Yeah, that's one thing we should talk about.
I absolutely want
my magnum opus, actually.
is it finished or is it?
Oh yeah, it's a 5-book serial that tells one big story in 5 books, kind of like Harry Potter in the 7 books.
Well, if it would sell like Harry Potter,
done pretty well.
I'm glad. I'm glad. Yeah. But this one, I loved Blues in the Dark. It's kind of remind me. It was inspired by a newspaper article that your mother sent you. Am I right about this? I don't know where I read that.
Right. I have no idea where this story really came from.
Yeah.
She, you know, my mom is great. She's in her 90s, late 90s. About 2.5 years ago, she sent me a newspaper article from Houston about a family that moved into some old house, and they started doing renovations, and they found a skeleton in the wall. And I just started thinking about secrets that old houses had.
Yeah. But this one involves the movie business, and
it
goes to a lot of your background. We'll talk more about it after the news, and the guy who delivers the news is also a writer. He will have his first book out, so maybe this is also inspiring Roger Badish. It is 9:30 on the dot. And here with the news is Roger Badish. Raymond Benson is here for a few more minutes before he drives to his suburban lair, where he must have an office filled with all manner of
ephemera.
Ephemera. But also where he writes. So what's your writing schedule, Raymond?
It kind of depends on the phase of the book I'm in.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm just starting a book, the first phase is a lot of daydreaming. So it doesn't look like I'm doing anything.
Sure.
I'm an outliner. You know, the writers are either plotters or pantsers.
Right.
They write by the seat of their pants.
Right.
So
right.
I'm a plotter. And I spend a good deal of time on my outline, maybe a month or two. And
when you're writing, when you're into writing, do you have a set time? I mean,
not necessarily. I do very well in the mornings. Not so well in the afternoons, but sometimes I have to do it in the afternoons.
Yeah.
And at night, you know, once it's dark.
Yeah, that's good, because these books are dark. Let's talk more about I want to talk just for a second. You and Dan Geyer, who was the local film critic for many, 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 many years, and I guess once a film critic, always a film critic.
Yeah, he's still a film critic.
You two have for years now been doing this kind of movie club all over. Give me 3 minutes on the movie club.
Okay. It's kind of like a Siskel and Ebert show, only it's live in front of an audience and it's 2 hours long. And we do it in Northwest suburban libraries. And we pick a topic. Let's say we do the greatest movie villains. And then we'll pick 15 and rank them, and we show clips from those movies and go down to number one. And we talk about it, we tell jokes, we have anecdotes, and it's a different topic every time we do a show.
Well, you're such a lively guy, and Dan is such a lively guy. You guys, this must be a sensation.
Well, people say we have good chemistry.
Yeah, I'll bet you we have good chemistry. You can get at Raymond's wonderful website, RaymondBenson.com, a list of all his upcoming appearances. There's one October 10th at the Schaumburg Township District Library, October 16th at the Palatine Library, then some separate readings that you're doing for the book. Now, let's talk about the book.
Okay.
You were inspired. It is a book that is deeply involved. It's a thriller.
Yes.
Mystery, but deeply involved in the film business, is it not?
It is. It's a Hollywood book.
Yep.
And, you know, I'm a big fan of film noir, and this book is about film noir.
Yeah.
It really is about it. The protagonist is a woman, a female producer mm-hmm. today in Hollywood, and she's the one that moves in that creepy old house. And it used to belong to an actress who was a femme fatale in 1940s film noir. And she was murdered along with a studio head. in the late 40s. And when this woman, her name's Carissa, when she discovers this, she goes, what? This sounds like a great story.
Yeah, she tries to put together
a movie. Yeah, she wants to make a movie of it.
Yeah.
And she uncovers some dark secrets.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the story then goes back in time, and we get the actress's story as well.
I know.
And it goes back and forth, back and forth. And
well, you do it so seamlessly, too. That must have been great fun for you, yes?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I've done that a lot. The Black Stiletto books do that a lot. It's another back and forth in time book.
See, that's what I've read this. Now I have to go back and read the whole Black Stiletto thing. Tell me about that series now.
Well, the Black Stiletto, that's a 5-book serial. It's one big story divided into 5 books. The first one came out in 2011, and the last one came out in 2014. It's about a woman in the 1950s. Who goes to New York, puts on a mask and a costume, calls herself the Black Stiletto, fights for social justice. She's active for 5 years, then mysteriously disappears. We cut to the present day. Here in the northwest suburbs of Chicago, there's a grown man taking care of his mother who has Alzheimer's, and he discovers, oh my gosh, she was the Black Stiletto.
Wow.
And so it goes back and forth, telling her story in the past and their story in the present. You know, and there are threats from the past that come and, you know, figure out who she is and stuff.
Oh, it sounds fabulous.
It's in development right now and for possibly a TV show or
One of the great things, yeah. You are now living in one of the wickedest publishing environments of the last...
it's tough.
Since Gutenberg.
Yeah, it's tough.
It is tough. But also, to be optimistic about it, there's... Netflix, there's Amazon, there are all these streaming services that are incredibly eager for product, and this Black Stiletto thing sounds perfect for that.
You would think.
You would hope. You would hope.
Yeah.
You're kind of a rock and roller too, aren't you?
Oh yeah, I play the piano. I used to play, I played at Mariano's, I played, you know, around. I played at O'Hare Airport at some of the bars for a while.
Really?
Yeah.
A bar pianist at O'Hare, I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. Wait, you have juggled a number of different kind of creative avenues in your whole life. Satisfactorily, too. I'm sure you would have liked to make $8 million or sell a book like Harry Potter, but you seem eminently satisfied in the creative path you've chosen.
Well, yes. I'm satisfied with what I've done. You know, sure, everybody would, like to be more financially successful.
Sure.
But, I'm happy that I have remained published for, you know, well over 30 years.
Well, knowing how hard it is in this environment, too, it's terribly hard. What are your thoughts on theater, your initial love affair with the theater?
You know, I would love to direct a play. You know, every now and then I stick my toe back in it. You know, there was this little theater company that's closed now up in the north side of Chicago where I did a couple of staged readings.
Which one?
It was called the... God.
Don't worry about it.
I'm drawing a blank.
Well, theater companies do come and go, but this is a great theater town. I hope you get to do that. I hope you get to do that.
Yeah.
Raymond Benson, it's a pleasure to know you. You people listening will be reading about Raymond Benson in the Tribune shortly. He is actually... Yes, go ahead.
Can I mention...
You can mention
on
anything.
October 26th, Saturday at 2 o'clock, I'll be at Centuries and Sleuths Bookstore.
Oh, Augie Alexie's great bookstore.
Yes, yeah, doing the book launch for Blues in the Dark.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
He's a good guy and a great. It's a great independent bookstore and a great supporter of books. Go to Raymond's website. It's Raymond Benson, BENSON.com. You'll get a lot of information there. There's some things we didn't even cover in 45 minutes of radio,
thank you for having me on.
It's my pleasure. I knew the minute I met you. A couple of weeks ago and you're mentioned in my story that should be in Tuesday's paper about Deborah's book about her, well, it's her father's book. You were very self-effacingly and very humbly. You retyped it, and you did some minor editing, and that's about it, and that's all the credit you want to take for it.
Signal Ensemble Theater was the name of that.
I
just remembered it.
I do hope. I mean, theater was your first love, and I think, do you ever write plays?
I've written a couple. Yeah.
I'd like to see you direct a show here.
Yeah,
that's what
too.
I'd really like. Raymond, it's an ongoing pleasure to know you.
Thank you, Rick.
My pleasure.
Bye-bye.
We'll take a break, and we'll talk to Dusty Tsang about an upcoming art show.